In this session, we shall look at how to calculate gains on certain intangible assets. The most common types of intangible assets are shares and leases. We've looked at the special rules for these assets in previous sessions. An intangible asset is one that cannot be seen, touched, or moved. Goodwill is an intangible asset. Goodwill is the difference between the value of the business as a whole and the value of the tangible business assets. Goodwill is the intangible or inherent value of the business. Goodwill is a chargeable asset for CGT purposes, and the sale of a business will give rise to chargeable gains on assets such as land and buildings and the goodwill. For the majority of this session, we shall look at capital gains arising on the grant, exercise and disposal of options. More on this later. We shall also look at how to deal with other intangible assets such as debts and loans and patent rights. Moving on now to the tax treatment of options. An option is a right to buy or sell an asset for a specified price within a specified time period. You will have come across share options in your personal tax course. A share option is a right for an employee to buy shares in his employer company within a specific time window at a fixed price. In this session, we shall look at options over other assets and will consider the CGT implications of options being granted, exercised, and disposed. We shall start with the disposal of an option. The tax position on the disposal of options depends on whether the option has a useful life of more or less than 50 years. If an option has a useful life of less than 50 years, the option is a wasting asset. If the option can last for 50 years or more, the option is a non-wasting asset. If a non-wasting asset is sold, normal CGT rules apply. We simply deduct cost from proceeds in the usual way. However, if a wasting asset is sold, special rules apply to calculate the gain. When a wasting asset is sold, the allowable costs for CGT purposes are deemed to waste away over the useful life of the asset. This means that allowable expenditure in the CGT computation is restricted. The base cost is the cost of the wasting asset multiplied by the useful life remaining, divided by the original life of the asset. Effectively, there is a straight line depreciation of the cost of the asset over time. The closer we get to the end of the useful life of the asset, the smaller the proportion of the base cost is allowable for CGT. Whilst the disposal of an option may give rise to an allowable loss, the abandonment of an option will not produce a loss. Therefore, if an option becomes worthless and is subsequently abandoned without either being sold or exercised, no allowable loss will accrue. Assume a taxpayer owns an option. The option cost £10,000 in January 2002 and can be exercised at any time in the following 10 years. The option will therefore expire and become worthless in January 2012 and will be a wasting asset for CGT purposes. In July 2010, the taxpayer sells the option. Sale proceeds are £8,000. From this, we deduct the allowable cost. The option was bought for £10,000 in January 2002. However, because we are dealing with the disposal of a wasting asset, only a proportion of this cost will be allowable. At the date of sale, the option has 1.5 years until it expires. The option originally had a useful life of 10 years. Therefore, only 15% of the cost, i.e. £1,500, can be deducted. The gain is therefore £6,500. Assume that Fred, who is a higher rate taxpayer, grants an option to Barney. The option gives Barney the right to buy Fred's house at any time in the next 5 years for the fixed price of £100,000. Fred, in this situation, is the grantor. Barney is the grantee. Barney pays Fred £5,000 for the option. If house prices rise, Barney will exercise his option and buy Fred's house for £100,000. If house prices fall, Barney will not exercise his option, and it is Fred who will have the best of the deal. Fred and Barney are effectively having a bet on the movement in house prices. For CGT purposes,
Section 144 of TCGA 1992 tells us that the grantor, i.e. Fred, is deemed to have sold an asset, i.e. the option, at the date of grant for £5,000. As the option has a base cost of zero, the proceeds of sale will be equal to the chargeable gain. Fred may have some incidental selling expenses, such as legal fees, etc., but essentially he makes a gain of £5,000, which is chargeable in the year the option is granted.
At any time until the expiration of the option, the grantee may exercise his right to either buy or sell. In our example, if Barney exercises his option, he is simply accepting the offer to buy Fred's house for £100,000. If Barney exercises his option, the transaction that subsequently takes place will be the disposal of the house by Fred and the acquisition of the house by Barney. We will therefore calculate a capital gain for Fred. Under Section 144 TCGA 1992, the grant and the exercise of the option will be treated as one transaction for CGT purposes. This means that the sale proceeds charged to CGT on Fred when the option is exercised are not just the £100,000 that Barney pays for the house, but it is also the £5,000 Barney paid to Fred when the option was originally granted.
Let's assume that Fred originally paid £40,000 for the house a few years ago. This gives Fred a gain of £65,000. We will aggregate this with Fred's other gains in the year and deduct the annual exemption to give Fred's taxable gains. Because Fred is a higher rate taxpayer, he will pay CGT at 28%.
However, because the option proceeds of £5,000 were originally charged to tax in the year the option was granted, by including these proceeds again in calculating the gain on exercise, this £5,000 is effectively being taxed twice. Therefore, any tax paid on the option proceeds in the year of grant can be credited against any tax payable when the option is exercised. Having considered the position of the person who granted the option, i.e. Fred, let's now consider the other side of the equation, i.e. the grantee's position. The exercise of the option means that Barney will be buying Fred's house. Barney will therefore make an acquisition for CGT purposes. We therefore need to calculate Barney's base cost. The base cost is simply the amount paid, in total, by Barney to Fred to acquire the house. This will therefore be the original option price of £5,000 plus the actual acquisition cost of £100,000. In the previous illustration, we looked at options enabling the grantee to buy an asset. These are called call options. Now we will look at the other side of the coin, being options which enable a grantee to sell an asset. These are called put options. Let's assume that Janet grants an option to John.
The option gives John the right to sell his house to Janet at any time in the next 10 years for a fixed price of £150,000.
Janet has granted the option, so she is the grantor. John can exercise the option, so he is the grantee. As this option gives the grantee the right to sell, this is a put option. John pays Janet £6,000 for the option. The grant of an option is a disposal by the grantor for CGT purposes. Therefore, Janet makes a capital gain of £6,000, less any selling expenses, in the year of grant. This gain will be charged to CGT in the normal way. If John decides to exercise his option, he will be selling his house to Janet. John will therefore make a disposal for CGT purposes, whilst Janet will make an acquisition. Let's consider John's position first. Under the terms of the option, John will sell the house to Janet for £150,000. From this, we deduct John's acquisition cost, which we assume to be £40,000.
However, John's base cost will be increased by the price he paid for the option. In total, John has spent £46,000, giving him a gain of £104,000. John will pay CGT in the year in which the option was exercised.
We now look at Janet's position. In the case of a put option, the grantor will buy an asset on the exercise of the option. Section 144 tells us that the grant and exercise of the option should be treated as one single transaction by the grantor for CGT purposes. Therefore, Janet is deemed to have bought John's house for the exercise price of £150,000 less the £6,000 Janet received on the grant of the option. Janet's base cost will therefore be £144,000. This could again give rise to an element of double taxation, because the £6,000 Janet received on the grant of the option was charged to CGT in the year of grant. Therefore, by reducing her base cost by £6,000, we are effectively taxing this amount twice. Therefore, any CGT paid on the option proceeds of £6,000 in the year of grant can be either credited or repaid when the option is exercised. If the grant and exercise take place in the same tax year, no tax is actually paid on the option proceeds, and the amount received by the grantor is simply deducted from base cost.
A taxpayer may make a profit on the sale of patent rights. A patent is a right to use an invention, process, or product.
If a person, be it an individual or a company, pays a patent royalty, the payment is a deductible payment for the payer and taxable income for the recipient.
Such royalties are typically paid annually. However, a taxpayer may choose to assign his patent rights to someone else. Effectively, the taxpayer is selling his rights to future royalty income in return for a capital sum.
If a taxpayer makes a profit on the sale of a patent right, the profit is not chargeable to capital gains tax, but is instead chargeable to income tax as miscellaneous income.
The income is treated as non-savings income. Therefore, the taxable profit is simply proceeds less any acquisition costs.
The taxable profit is not fully charged in the year of sale, as to do so would distort the tax computation and give an unusually excessive charge in one tax year. Instead, the revenue will spread the charge evenly over six consecutive tax years, starting with the year of sale. These rules are contained at section 590 of ITOIA 2005.
The taxpayer may make a claim to have all of the profits charged in the year in which the patent rights are sold. This may be beneficial if the taxpayer has losses in the year of sale, or he would be paying tax at a lower marginal rate in this particular year. An election for the income to be fully taxed in the year of sale should be made no later than the 31st of January following the anniversary of the year of sale.
For a sale in 2010-11, therefore, the election should be made by the 31st of January 2013.
Finally, if the rights to an invention are being sold by the original inventor, the profits may be treated as relevant earnings for pension purposes.